My motto has always been live with meaning.
Hey team, how is everyone? I hope you've been enjoying the first months of summer. I have definitely been loving them. I even got to meet new people and I am beyond excited to introduce one of them to you today. She is a world traveler, self-taught ultra marathon runner and content creator, so a true rock star, and an even more lovely soul. She has such an important throw-in for us. She will teach us about self-love, self-empowerment, and so much more. You can truly look forward to hearing this episode. So have another amazing Sunday. Make sure to give us 5 stars and subscribe to the show wherever you're listening. That would help us so much. And now get ready for Juju Kim. How did that, you know, come across? How did that come into your life?
I honestly have no idea, but it's just something that I've been carrying since childhood. And I really don't know where it came from, but I recently went back home to New Zealand and I was clearing out all my old things from my parents' house. And I was reading my old diaries and just the common theme that I kept seeing out throughout my diaries is I just really wanted to find meaning for life or for something. I wanted something bigger, something deeper. I wasn't sure what that was. I somehow feel like I'm closer to it.
I was about to ask, what does it mean to you today?
Today, I'm working full-time as a content creator, and I think the thing I love about being a content creator is the stories that I'm able to share, and this gives me a lot of meaning, not just from my own stories, but also listening to other people's stories, being able to share that, and yeah, there's just more depth to everything that I'm creating, and that really lights me up.
That's so interesting because one of the, you know, prejudices that evolves or revolves around content creating is for sure that it's superficial, which is, you know, the complete opposite of depth and meaning.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
I personally think there are like 2 categories. Like there's the influencing side. And I think that can be very superficial. Like I'm selling to you. I'm just kind of telling you the surface level stuff to get you interested and hooked in. And then I think there's like another side that's content creating, which is more around storytelling and trying to share a message. And so I work as a content creator, not only for myself, but for other creators. And the creators that I work with, this is what I love and respect the most, that I know that even though it might seem, you know, just like a superficial trending video, there's actually so much thought into that video to speak to a particular audience, to speak in a way that will reach that particular audience. And also visually, because that's how we're communicating now, you know? So that for me is really, really important. And especially with the clients that I work for as well, that if I know that they have a very clear why and a very clear message, then that, really inspires me.
We definitely have to dig deeper into, you know, everything you do. And in order to be able to do that best, all my team members, as I call my guests here on this podcast, get the chance to introduce and describe themselves the way they want to at the beginning of every episode. And this is why I want to give you this chance right now. And, you know, I don't know if you watch football or if you care about FIFA at all, the football online game, but you can maybe just, you know, describe yourself kind of like in bullet points, you know, on a short kind of profile. Who is Doju Kim? What do we need to know? What does she do? What's going on?
So I'm Juju Kim. I was born in South Korea and immigrated to New Zealand in 1995. So I grew up in New Zealand and I currently live in Berlin. I'm 35. I work full time as a content creator and I'm a Pisces.
Sure. Nice to you.
I know it didn't. Noted. I was just thinking about like bullet points. And then, like, yeah. I don't know, blood type B plus.
In case anyone needs to know, or like in any case of emergency, we're ready now. Now that you said Pisces, I'm not very good with signs and stars and everything. What are the Pisces known for? Though. Do you know?
I'm also not like really into it. I just think it's a bit fun to kind of know a bit. And sometimes I think when I'm a bit low in my life, it's just nice to get a different perspective and just, you know. But I know that for Pisces, we're very emotional, very creative. If you can imagine, you know, like, because it's the fish sign. So I think we're also like quite deep, you know, like we like to go, which can be a good thing and a bad thing. Because it's like we're deep, but then
a bad thing
in the sense, like, because we're very emotional, like we can really like just keep drowning in our emotions.
I understand. Okay. Yeah. Do you feel like you really drown your emotions sometimes?
Yeah. And that's actually why I started running. Yeah.
Really? Yeah. So tell us all about it. You only said that you are a full-time content creator so far.
True.
Listeners don't know yet that we actually met during a Garmin event, which was all about, you know, female wellness, well-being, health, nutrition, sleep, tracking of your health. And you were invited. Well, I hosted it and you were invited because you are a runner, actually. You do track all of your metrics as well. Yes. So tell us, how did you get into running and how did you get into becoming a content creator?
So how I got into running, I think you asked me this when we met and I said, I started running because of my ex-boyfriend. He's a runner and I guess I just started to probably try and impress him. But it was also COVID. It was also during COVID. And like I just shared before, I used to have the tendency to really kind of drown in my emotions. And the one thing that my ex would say to me was just go for a run. And we used to live
like the solution for everything.
Yeah, he was like, just go for a 3K run. And so I started. Running is really hard. It's really, really hard. So it took me years. So I started running with my ex and then I kept running because of my ex to you know.
Get him out of the system.
Process my emotions. And also during this transition, I was trying to make it as a full-time yoga teacher, but then I had an injury and I couldn't teach anymore. And it was also this moment where I was thinking, like, what do I do? Like, how do I make money? You know, like if I, I also just saw that like being a yoga teacher wasn't sustainable for me. I have grown up with this practice. I love this practice, but I don't have the passion to really make it my life. It's a part of my life, but I don't want to make it my life.
Got it. Okay.
And so I was really in this position where I was like, how am I going to make money? And I had already been playing around on social media trying to advertise my yoga classes. And just very spontaneously, I met one of the Lululemon ambassadors at the time who was looking for some social media help. And I told her, look, I'm learning, but I learn fast and I would really love to delve more into this. And so that's kind of how I got my first social media gig. And that kind of led to the next thing, to the next thing, to the next thing. And then my big kind of big break was I met one of the biggest fitness YouTubers in Germany and started working, growing ananas.
Yes, she, of course.
She does home workouts. So I started working with her as a content helper. Mm-hmm. And just really started to fall in love with it. And I decided that I just wanted to go all into this. But I was, at the time, I was still living in Berlin. And, you know, like to start putting yourself on camera, like it really requires a lot of courage and ego depths in a way. Yes. And I don't think I was ready to do it in Berlin at the time. So actually, I decided to move to Barcelona because I wanted like a blank slate. I wanted a blank canvas. I just wanted to go somewhere where I didn't know anybody so that I could just try. And
that's so interesting.
Yeah.
Because you know, it's still the camera and you.
I know. But it's, I just needed a new space. So I packed up everything. I moved to Barcelona and I started making content about running because it's just something that I was doing every day. So like I was sharing before, my tendency was to kind of, you know, dive deep into my emotions and kind of be stuck there. And my coping mechanism is to rot in bed. Like I can
not
rot.
Not good.
So the one
running
promise
is never a good place.
No, it's not. So the one promise that I made to myself was to just go for a run, like a 20-minute run every day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I started to make content around running because it was something that I was doing every day. And I knew in order to become a content creator, you just have to start posting every day. You know, that's the only way you're going to get good at anything. So yeah, it was, that's how I ended up kind of content creating. It was really, really tough because there was no work in Barcelona. And mm-hmm. so I was just trying, doing everything that I can. And actually, Growing Ananas, she reached out and she said that she really missed working with me and if she could imagine us working together again. So yeah. I started flying back to Berlin, working with her, flying back to Barcelona. We did that for about 3 months and then realized this is not sustainable. So I was like, I'm just going to move.
Well, for you, right?
Yeah. And so I was like, I'm just going to move back to Berlin and came back to Berlin.
And what changed for you then? Because, you know, you said you had to leave Berlin in order mm-hmm. to feel free enough or confident enough to actually dive into the whole putting yourself in front of a camera kind of thing. Did that change? Because, I mean, you're now putting yourself out there every single day, posting with your face in frame. How did you grow into that?
It definitely changed because I was much more clear on what I was doing. And I guess because, so I was in Barcelona for about 8 months and it was like 8 months of posting every day. I posted every day. I made a video every day. So I think by the 8 months, like I did definitely gain a bit more confidence. And also working for, you know, this really big creator gave me confidence. And so coming back, it also, like, I knew why I was coming back to Berlin. I think that was also the point. I think, you know, in the beginning, I had moved to Berlin for somebody and then also tried, you know, my own things. But in the end, it didn't really feel like my city. So mm-hmm. coming back.
And I
just,
mean, Berlin is special, too.
Berlin is special, yeah. But yeah, coming back, it just, yeah, it felt like I was very clear on why I was, why I'm here, why I mm-hmm. came back. And also, yeah, just I had practiced being in my new identity enough that I could come back and still feel like this is what I'm doing.
That's so interesting. Yeah. I really feel like this is important for a lot of people to hear, and I wish everyone would make this experience. I'm not saying necessarily as a content creator or, you know, speaking in front of anyone. It's more about you can actually practice and like grow into whatever you want to see yourself as in the future.
100%. Right? Yeah, it's just practice. It's all practice.
Definitely is. And like overcoming this, probably, well, this is my choice of words now, but like this cringe phase of not knowing and then not being sure. Like, what if the feedback is uncomfortable or negative or whatever? There's like this whole process behind this, which can be easily transferred to every single situation in life, honestly.
Definitely.
Just being ready to suck at something new.
Yeah, yeah. Oh my gosh, my videos, you know, when I look back, because, you know, sometimes Instagram shows you your like old things. They're terrible. They're really bad, you know? Yeah. But you have to, I mean, Mr. Beast, one of the biggest YouTubers, he also says it. He's, you have to make 1,000 videos and they're all going to be shit. But that's, you know, like...
That's how it is.
That's how it is.
Tell me how your relationship with running developed, though, because, you know, you said you didn't you didn't run before you got into this relationship with your ex-partner. And I can imagine that the first kind of 3Ks or 20 minutes or whatever did not feel good. And if I'm not mistaken, you're currently training for an ultra marathon. So you did come quite a long way there as well.
I came a long way. Yeah, I mean, so my running journey really started for myself, mostly to get out of my own trap. So that's really like what kept me going, because it was the only way that I could break out of my patterns and my habits. Like I said, you know, like my coping mechanism is to rot. And I think I just
rot, this word.
Yeah, like, but literally I'm just rotting in bed, you know, and you're constantly in this internal fight because you know it's not good for you, but you can't get out of it. And running was just the only way that I could. And so that's how it really started. And once I came back to Berlin, I joined some run clubs, and I guess there was, you know, some motivation there, and I started doing half marathons. I signed up for my first half marathon also because, yeah, it was just something that I really thought I couldn't do. Like 21 kilometers just sounded so impossible. But then once I did my first half marathon, I got a taste of it and I was like, oh, I want to do it under a certain amount of time, because that also felt like a really cool challenge.
The ambition kicked in.
And then it was just these. And then after that, I just wanted to do another one because it would, like, I would set another goal. But I really liked that part of myself. I mean, this part of myself was very new to me. I've never been like a competitive person. Like, I've never really had this kind of fire, but it started to really awaken this fire. And alongside that, it also translated into my personal life, my work life, my personal life, because I suddenly wanted more for myself. And I really learned from running, especially when I started taking on these journeys, all it is just consistency and discipline. If I just stick to the plan,
no talent,
I'm like, there is no way that I cannot make it to the finish line. I mean, yes, of course, there are factors that are out of my control, but, you know, the best I can do is to just show up every day, do the plan. And I know that that's going to set me up to get to the finish line. So that was kind of my whole journey with the half marathon. And then I decided to sign up for my first marathon. And that was like a whole, you know, that was like a bigger journey. And I really remember this feeling running the last 5 kilometers of the marathon, just really having that clear thought of, oh my God, I can do anything. I can do anything. I just have to be consistent.
This is making me emotional.
Like, I just have to be consistent and disciplined. That's it. And then, you know, I recently ran from LA to Las Vegas. And
that was my God.
There was
491 kilometers.
So crazy. And, you know, I also signed up to this really being like, there's no way I can do this. But let me just try, you know, because why not? Why not? And I think, you know, kind of going back to my motto of living with meaning, mm-hmm. I think it just, I could also see, there's like so many stories coming in now.
One after the other, we get time.
So big thing for me, actually, big reason why I ended up signing up for that race was last year I got a letter from my high school that we had written when we were 18 and we put in a time capsule and they sent it to us last year.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Oh, so cool.
This
oh my
is
God.
So cool.
I really advise everyone to do something like that for themselves.
This is amazing.
The best.
But one of the things that made me feel really sad and quite like broke my heart in a way was I am talking about basically the same struggles that I carried with me, the same mm-hmm. lack of self-belief, the same doubt, the same everything that I just carried for years. And I think it was really that moment I was like, no, like it's enough. We're done. Like this is enough. And I think when I signed up for that ultra marathon and decided to do it, it was really a way to kind of, to prove myself, like the finish line is the bonus, but it's just about trying and doing it because I needed to do something so extreme just to rewire all of that. And that was really the journey for me and the reason why I said yes to this and the reason why I tried.
That's so cool. And you're saying so many so important things. You know, if you're just showing up, if you're just consistent, and that's so much already.
Yeah.
You can do anything.
You can do anything.
If you're just not ending the journey before, you know, before you're actually where you wanted to get in the first place, it can actually happen.
Yeah. And there's so much power in consistency as well, because with consistency, actually, you know, some days it's easy, but some days it's really like a fight with yourself. But it's also these moments you really meet that part of yourself. And the more you meet it, the more you befriend it, the easier it is actually to work with yourself. Because these things I don't think will ever go away. It's just part of us. It's also part of being human. But I think, just when there is a deeper why, like you just want better for yourself, then you start to meet it with more kindness and more respect. And
I really love that.
Yeah.
Take us with you on that 491 kilometer long journey from LA to Las Vegas. First of all, I mean, where do we even begin? Because as you said before, agreeing or, you know, challenging yourself to do a full marathon came with so much more. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you're talking about nutrition, mm-hmm. sleep, mm-hmm. health tracking in general. I don't know. This, you know, becomes a whole lifestyle.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine that this takes on another level if you're running close to 500 kilometers.
Yeah.
Through a freaking desert.
This is insane. It's like, my mind just went blank.
No worries.
My mind just went blank. Can you ask me the question again?
Of course. Like, how do you prepare for a long marathon or ultra like that? Where do you even start?
So you have to consider, like, with this race, because it's in LA, just the costs of not only the training, like it was, I trained for 6 months, which is probably not, well, it wasn't enough time. Even my coach said that. She was very hesitant to work with me because she said it wasn't enough time. But I said I wanted to try anyway. So you have to consider the costs of the 6 months of training or longer, and then the travel costs to LA, then the costs of, you know, hiring, renting an RV, a Jeep, having a crew, food, accommodation in Las Vegas once you get there, flights back. So for me, when I first signed up, it was really this big mountain of where do I even start? Because I'm not making a crazy ton of money. I can't afford all of this. So I kind of, so it was like the biggest lesson of an ultra marathon is that you have to break things up because that's the only way that it's manageable. So I think the journey already started there where, I saw this big mountain and I just had to start taking small steps of what was possible. And I just started, I started training by running 5 kilometers every day because that's what I heard from another ultra runner. And I kept reaching out to different ultra runners, trying to get training tips, and was doing that until I completely burnt out. Because also another really important thing I think people should know is that everyone is different. So your training is also different. You know, some people need much more recovery time. Some people don't. It also depends how long you've been running or, you know, how, what kind of activities you did growing up. Like, you know, it's different for everybody. And so I was just trying to, copy what everyone else is doing. And in the end, kind of burnt out. And that's when I actually reached out to my coach, who I currently still work with. And she first told me to stop. So I stopped all training for 2 weeks, got my energy back. And then we started kind of, we created a plan that was much more sustainable for my body. And it was also really interesting because I think another misconception I had, and also I think a lot of people have around ultra marathons, is that you just have to run. And that's not true. A lot of it was actually so much strength training because your body has to be able to endure all the impact, you know? So actually I did more strength training than running in the beginning. And then obviously I did ramp up the kilometers towards the end. I also never ran like long distances. So even if I were to run like 60 kilometers a day, I would never run like 60 kilometers straight. I would break up the runs. So I would do like 3 20 kilometer runs. And that was so much, that was much better with the impact on my body. And it also taught my body how to recover quickly in between. Because, with an ultra marathon, again, it's really about breaking things up. You don't run just 491 kilometers nonstop. You know, you stop in between.
How does it work?
So for this race, I ran with a team of women, actually. It was called Team Solo. And we were sponsored by the Ultra Marathon organization, because the goal this year was to have 50% of the participants to be women. And so this was something really, really exciting to be part of. And so the organizer for Team Solo, she had actually run this race multiple times and she holds the record as the fastest woman. And so she designed Lucy Shardell. Amazing woman.
Gotta check her out.
She created the whole route for us, and so we had decided like the amount we would run every day. This changed on race day because there was a heat wave and it was so hot. I think the first day we were supposed to run like 106 or something, and we only managed, not only, but we managed 80 kilometers. And then the rest of the time I was just trying to like catch up on the extra kilometers. But we broke it up. And then So every day, let's say we were running like 80 kilometers, but then we would also break up the 80 kilometer runs to like, I mean, because we're in the States, we're using miles, but like we would break everything up to 10 miles. So every 10 mm-hmm. miles, we would stop, have some water, have some food, you know, cool down because it was so hot, and then we'd go again, stop after 10 miles, rest up, and then, and so on. So we're running just all day.
You yeah. would be stopping for, I don't know, maybe 30, 60 minutes, or for how long between the 10 mile?
Like in the mornings. So we would start early, 4 a.m. because, yeah, it was so hot. So we wanted to run before the sun came up. Got it.
Wow. Yeah.
So when it was cool, I think we tried to keep the breaks like 30 minutes or less. Mm-hmm. And then during the day, like middle of the day when it was just so hot, I think that's when we took, yeah, maybe like an hour or something, and then mm-hmm. tried to go out there and survive the heat. And
it's crazy. Well, there'd be like a support vehicle or something?
Yeah. So we had an RV with us that would be stationed, and then a Jeep as well that would kind of go back and forth, giving us whatever we need and things. And the crew was amazing. There's no way I would have made it without my crew. Like, they were really, really, really incredible.
And then, Juju, how many days in total?
It was 6 days. 6 days in total. Yeah, 6 days in total. I got my period day 4. I got a UTI on top of that. It was so painful. And I think, I and it's also something I didn't expect, actually. I mean, the UTI, I knew my period was coming, so I had that in mind. And it was something we talked about because it was actually the thing I was most nervous about. Like, how am I supposed to
understand?
Yeah, manage survive. My period, like, in the desert, you know? Mm-hmm. But yeah, like, but again, like, you know, being a woman, you're like popping a squat in the desert. Like, obviously, it's, you know, you get some bacteria and stuff. Like, it's, yeah, it was really, really painful, but it also so real because these are things that women struggle with, you know, and taking on these challenges.
And this is what women do, run 500 kilometers on a period.
Yeah.
I mean, it was the second the third, but still. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
That's crazy. And then how did you recover? How did you come back after those six days?
Oh, my goodness. It took me some time, which I did not expect. Mm-hmm, so I don't know if you've ever heard of like the post-race blues.
Mm-mm.
It's like, you know, like after a high event, you had the dip.
Obviously. Yeah. That I definitely know from, you know, my own job. Yes.
Exactly. So I remember experiencing for the first time after my marathon, because really this whole marathon training was my life. And then I did the race, and then it was just like, what am I doing now? Like, I have no purpose. And so I had experienced this before. So I was already preparing myself to support myself through this phase, because I knew it would come, because this whole ultra marathon journey really had been my whole life. Then, you know, it was this crazy run. So actually I booked flights to Colombia. And
nice.
Yeah, so I was thinking, oh, it's going to be so nice, you know, the Caribbean, just chilling. I have this like hot, spicy summer. It's going to be great. So I booked flights from Las Vegas to Colombia, to Cartagena. And it was nice.
I was just about to say, I feel like there's a huge but coming like, in.
It was nice. Like, the weather was nice. You know, the food is cheap. Hotels are cheap. Like, so, you know, I could really, really enjoy myself. But I did kind of struggle because culturally it's just not, they're still quite behind. And it was just a lot of catcalling and just constant, like, because also there weren't that many Asian travel, like female travelers. So I really just stood out wherever I was going. And so they have this need to call out like, China, Chinita, like, I don't know. Yeah. So it was just at some point, it just got so annoying. You know, and that was just causing more stress because I was like, oh my God, like I don't even want to leave and I don't want to be sitting by the beach because I've just got random men like talking to me. It's actually really horrible. And so honestly, like the last weeks, I really like, because I stayed there for 2 weeks. The last weeks, I didn't really leave my hotel. Like I would just sleep and chill and then take the Uber to a restaurant. And so, I mean, it wasn't really like the trip that I imagined. At the same time,
very recharging, right?
Yeah. At the same time, I also know like how much of a privilege it was to do that, you know, to really take that time to just rest and recover. And I had one kind of down moment and I thought, oh, okay, this is the blues. It's here. That sucked, but we're done. And I thought that was over. And came back home. I took another 2 weeks off. And then I told my coach
home
I wanted
to Berlin now, yeah?
Home to Berlin.
Yeah.
And then I told my coach, I'm ready to train again because I said yes to another race. Mm-hmm. And I started training. But my body was so weak. I was so weak. I was so tired all the time. And I, in the end, like I just had no energy. So I was showing up to the gym because, you know, consistency and discipline and, you know, I'm going to show up. I was showing up, but I could barely do anything because I just had no energy. And I really,
this is so important. We have to listen.
We have to listen. And I thought I was listening, but I wasn't really listening. And in the end, I burnt out and I just couldn't manage anything. And my brother, he lives in London and he told me to just come over for a week. So I packed up everything. I mean, I couldn't even pack my bag. I was there like that morning on the phone to my brother, like, I don't even know what to pack. I can't pack. And he was like, just come. Like, you don't have to bring anything. You can wear my clothes. Like, just come. And so I went over to London. It was very sweet. And yeah, him and his girlfriend, they took care of me. You know, like cooked for me and just let me rest. And it was very, very wholesome. And as I was coming back to Berlin, I was on the train, just crying because I just didn't want to go home. Like I didn't want to go home to just being alone, to doing everything on my own again, to being strong and to start all over again. And I think that was that point where I was like, okay, I need to stop. I need to stop. I need to get my energy back. And so I decided to stop training and I told my coach, I said, okay, I'm stopping. She's like, finally, like fucking finally.
Okay.
Just
okay,
waiting.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And
she was waiting for you to get it.
Exactly. And, you know, I'd already committed to this race. And so then I also had to reframe what this race was going to be because I didn't want to pull out. Mm-hmm. And one of the biggest takeaways also from doing that LA to Las Vegas trip and what I shared about, you know, this year being 50% women female participants, and also me being one of the first Asian participants, like it was actually something really meaningful. And I also, you know, even just to get to the start line in LA, the amount of men who told me that I couldn't, that I shouldn't be doing it because I'd never done, you know, that I should do smaller races first before attempting this one, you know, like there were so many opinions that I had to kind of overcome. And I also just realized, you know, what I learned, that especially in ultramarathons, women are underrepresented, but Asian women even less. So then I just started to reframe, you know, what I wanted this next race to represent. And that was it for me. I was like, I want to just make sure that I'm coming to the start line with energy, feeling happy and joyful and just feeling good. You know, like I have the opportunity to stand in the start line and I want to show other women that they can. And especially for me, like as an Asian woman, like I want other Asian women to be able to stand there, you know? And I had a really beautiful encounter when I actually arrived in London. I got off the plane and I was on the way to, you know, catch the train to my brother's. And there was a girl who came up to me and she said, she's been, you know, she's been following me and she watches my videos. She's of Asian descent who grew up in the UK. And
this is in London right now?
In London, yeah. And she got so emotional and we're both there kind of crying. Yeah. And she's just talking about how she felt so seen. And, you know, that also just really, yeah, not only touched me, but inspired me as well to do that. Because, to keep going and to do it and to rewrite, you know, redefine what it is to be a runner, to be an ultra runner, to just to be whatever, actually. But yeah, that's how I reframed it and showed up to the start line. I was feeling good. You know, I really took that 2 weeks. It was 2 weeks out to the race and I really, really focused on recovery, like sleep, nutrition, everything. I made sure I was spending time with friends, you know, just to get myself feeling mentally good. And I showed up to the start line, had glitter on my face, feeling cute. I stood there and I had a really, really good time till 38 kilometers. I tried really, really hard. And at 38 kilometers, I was running downhill. It was super steep and I could just feel my knees. They really felt like they were going to explode. And I stopped and I was like, okay, I know that I could keep pushing now, but I also know that if I keep pushing, I'm going to injure myself. And I have another really exciting race coming up. Well, not a race, it's a run, but I have another exciting run coming up in August and I want to be good for this. I also had this good and healthy. And I also had this Garmin wellness retreat where we met each other. Like I had this coming up. I wanted to be there and, you know, be able to participate in all the activities. So I was like, okay, I think this is the moment I want to stop. And I really just checked in with myself and I felt good about it. And also with this race, there was a time, there were like cutoff times. Mm-hmm. And so because I was a bit slow, I just was not prepared for this mountain. It was so steep. I think I climbed up like 2,600 meters. Like it was insane. And this is not something you can train for in Berlin. Like Berlin is too flat. Like you cannot, you can't, you need to be training in the mountains. So it was a really good lesson. But I also, you know, one of my goals was to have a good time and enjoy the views. And I realized for 38 kilometers, I'd been so focused on like making it up. I hadn't actually looked at the views. So I was like, okay, I'm going to stop. I'm just going to walk, have a good time, enjoy the views, look at the mountains, and then end the race at 41 kilometers, which was the next aid station. And actually when you walk, there's like when you get to the station, they have this little beeper that beeps to, you know, I was like, when it beeped, I was like, yeah, that's my finish line.
I'm done.
Yeah, and I was super happy. And what was also really beautiful was that I shared this, you know, because I'm sharing everything online. So I shared this with my online community and they're so supportive and, you know, like really happy, like really happy and proud that I took this decision. And just to show like...
I was just about to say, this is also so much progress. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Being able to actually detect what your body is telling you and then make the right decision for your health or, you know, for yourself in that moment, even though it might not be what you wanted, you know, when you went or started at the starting line.
Definitely, yeah.
Huh. Juju, let's proceed with our three categories that we still have left to cover.
Okay,
which of these three little bubbles would you like to start with?
I think the middle one is talking to me.
The middle one is talking to you. The middle one is the shootout. That's a little rapid fire questions, which you can answer short or extensively.
Okay. Okay.
Whatever you feel like. Okay? You ready?
I'm ready.
Short or long run?
Short.
Yeah? Why though?
It's just short and cute.
Short and cute, we like that.
Yeah.
Regular surface or trail?
Oh, trail. I really fell in love with the trail running.
Which is so much more, difficult and challenging, really. Whole different style of running, to be honest.
Yeah, but it's really beautiful. You're so connected to nature, and you have to be really present, because you have to see where your feet's going and where your feet are going, and I don't know, you just have to be so aware, and you really use your whole body for balance, and I don't know, it's yeah,
Interesting.
it's
Huh, I would have
nice.
thought you'd just like to go. Nah. All right. Next one is, what's your favorite music or playlist when running?
Oh, this is hard to answer because it really depends on my mood. So sometimes it's like really girly pop. Like once in a blue moon, it's like techno. I don't know why. Like it's just like I think
Well, I mean, you live in
once.
Berlin, so.
Yeah, but I don't even listen to techno. But once I went running with a friend who listens to techno, and it was just so nice with this like rhythm. Sometimes, yeah, it's actually nothing. Like I often go running without listening to anything. Yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine that being very healthy too. You're much more tuned in with yourself and probably less autopilot, right?
Yeah.
What's your favorite workout that complements your running?
I think more recently Pilates, I think, yeah. But the thing is, because I am on a very like I have a training plan with a coach, it's running and then it's strength training, so I can't really do any extra workouts that I like to do. But in the last weeks that I haven't been training and slowly getting back into it, I really have to say I enjoy Pilates. It's this like gentle burn that I really like.
Yeah, same.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not gonna say low intensity because it's very intense, but
It's
it's not like your heart rate is up all the time, but it's still burning. So when you say you're doing strength, are you just regularly lifting, or what are you focusing
No,
on?
I have like a specific strength training program from my coach. So my coach, she's like a rehab a strength specialist. So some of them are like very rehab specific in order to, work on whatever I need to work on. But yeah, they're like very specific exercises for runners. Yeah.
Tell us about some of them, please.
I mean, I do lift heavy, so we she really encourages like heavy weights, but what do you like small like low reps but heavy weights. So I'll do things like front squats, but I'll try to load as heavy as I can. Yeah, and like Bulgarian split squats, things like
Yeah,
that,
got
but with
it.
like a specific setup. Palof press thing. I don't know, a lot of
Oh, I
I
don't know
actually don't
what
know the
that
name.
is.
I don't know the names, but you know
Yeah,
the
those are like
cables.
pulling,
Yeah,
yeah,
like lots of
stuff.
different like cable
Oblique.
movements. Yeah, exactly. Because yeah, with running, it
Focus.
is a lot of this kind of movement. So yeah. But
Interesting.
it's
So that would be then shorter but heavy workouts too, right?
exactly.
The weight sessions wouldn't be too long.
No,
Interesting.
yeah. Yeah.
Cool. We haven't covered it in this podcast yet, but I do know that you have traveled the world in insane ways. So,
Yeah.
what's your top three places you've traveled to?
Top three places I've traveled to for diving, the Philippines, Malapascua Island. I think that was the best place I've been diving. Honduras. I used to live in Honduras for 2.5 years, and I think that was my first kind of real eye-opener to like a completely different culture. And so somehow it will always remain in my top five, top three. And I actually recently went to South Korea, Seoul, South Korea, for the first time in 10 years. And honestly,
oh, wow, long time.
Seoul is amazing. So I can really recommend, yeah, Seoul.
Nice. Some of your family still lives in Seoul,
yes.
Then?
Yes, yeah.
Cool. Yeah, yeah. So you're all over the place. I like those three. Yeah. And then the last one is, what do you struggle with most when thinking about running?
The thing I struggle with the most, probably self-doubt.
Like as in, I can't do this, I'm too tired today, I'm not strong enough.
I'm not strong enough. I'm not progressing fast enough. Or I'm not, like, it's not happening fast enough, or it's just taking longer. Like, I've been,
oh, I know those.
Yeah, why am I weak? Why am I still weaker? Why am I not faster? Why am I not, kind of these kind of doubts that come, yeah.
Hate those. And then what do you do? How do you answer those shitty sentences?
I think it's recognizing that they are shitty sentences and they're not serving me. And so just, yeah, listening to it and then doing the opposite. Because I keep, like the more you challenge it, then you also tell yourself, actually, like, I can. And then, yeah, then it's just, yeah, then it's just reframing and, oh, well. Yeah, what is, like, you know, then celebrating any little win, I think.
So we've covered the shootout, which leaves us with two more categories here. Where are we going next?
Let's go with the one on the, yeah, that one.
With this one. Oh, I'm excited about this one. It's the category head coach.
Head coach.
Which has us, hopefully, learn about what or who acts like a head coach in your life, you know, in moments that you've struggled in, or yeah, maybe one of those rotting moments. What or who has gotten you back on track? And how?
Oh, that's a really good question. I don't exactly know who this is, but there is a head coach inside me that wants better, that wants more, you know? And even when I'm rotting, the reason I will get out of bed is because there is something inside me that doesn't want to be there and wants something else. And I have to say I'm quite disconnected from my family. Like, it's just my immediate family. We immigrated to New Zealand, and then all my other family are in South Korea or in Chile and South America. And I didn't really grow up connected to, you know, my cousins or my aunties and my grandparents, just from time to time when we'd go back. And
yeah, it's really long distances too.
Exactly.
Chile.
Yeah.
South Korea. New Zealand.
And during COVID, my grandma from my dad's side, we started talking a lot more. And I had this really crazy experience. It's a story for another day, from like the Copenhagen half marathon that I did, where I really felt like at some point I channeled my grandmother's feet. It was a very bizarre experience, but somehow it just led me to this question that I never asked my grandma, because I know that she comes from North Korea. I asked her how she escaped how she moved to South Korea, because it was just before the war. And she told me the story of how she left South Korea. It was this crazy journey. And it was also so crazy because she was telling me how, because they went by boat and they had to wait, they waited in this house, with her. She was there with her younger sister, and they waited until the tide came in so that they could get on the boat and take the boat to South Korea. And somehow listening to the story, really, like, I just felt something really deep inside. So maybe that's part of my head coach as well. Like,
it's so interesting.
I just, like, there's so much that needs to be lived from me. I don't know if that makes sense. But I, like,
it does.
And I also think about that with my mom. You know, she immigrated to New Zealand and really sacrificed a lot, but didn't really get the chance to fully live her life. You know, it's also very cultural, like Korean parents, especially moms, they just pour everything into their children. So she didn't prioritize her life and herself. And mm-hmm. so also just seeing that, like, there's just a lot, you know, and then it's also my dad, like, who just has this really adventurous spirit, but was never brave enough to take these leaps. And I feel like I have all of this in me that
wow.
just needs to, like, move. And I think somehow that's
beautiful.
Yeah,
I really like it.
That's the head coach, I think.
Everyone in your family is a little piece of your head coach.
I guess.
That's beautiful. I really like it. It's like an inner voice.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Thank you for sharing this with us.
Hmm.
And Juju, we have one more category left. It's the German one, so I won't bother showing you. It's the throw-in. This is the category where you get the chance to place and share a topic with us that you think deserves a stage.
This is quite a new topic that I'm starting to talk about, and it's being a BIPOC woman in the wellness space. And mm-hmm. I really had this realization at the retreat we were in last week.
We briefly talked about that.
Yeah, because I was
hoping you'd bring it up.
Yeah. I mean, I'm still trying to make sense of how all my thoughts and everything, but just one thing that was really clear was I really, you know, I grew up in New Zealand, so I grew up with Western culture and always listening to European women who look very different to me, sharing their perspectives, and I don't want to say telling me what to do. No one's telling me what to do, but, you know, like, giving me a lot of information. And I believed it for a long time, also because there was no one else, you know, and somehow everything just kind of clicked when we were at this wellness retreat, also because I was the only woman of color there. And I just started to see how much I had neglected my own, like, ancestral wisdom as well. And, you know, like, I never ever suffered with any gut issues or any digestive issues until I started eating, you know, food that I saw other wellness people eating, telling me to eat, or what, you know, these
what
advice
would that
they
be?
Would, you know, like, just even like oats or like chia seeds, I don't know, like, you know, all these like trendy food things, mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm, yeah, mm-hmm. There was for a while, it was like this raw diet and all sorts of stuff, you know, and just kind of going back to what my body has been used to, I feel great, you know. And actually, I thought this the other day, like, when my parents immigrated to New Zealand, we didn't change our diet. We made it work.
I saw you posting about the rice cooker.
Yeah, like, we kept eating Korean food, you know. We couldn't find, you know, there were no Asian stores or anything. You couldn't find anything like gochujang or gochugaru, like Korean chili paste or anything like that, that's like mm-hmm. key for Korean foods. But they would take it, like, we would bring it over from Korea.
Yeah.
Or like, that have family members send it over, and we made it work. We made our own kimchi. I remember, because at the time, you couldn't find this Chinese cabbage that you make kimchi with, but they mm-hmm. we would just make it with normal cabbage, you know? So like, we've always known what works for our body and what works for us. And I don't know. Yeah. At some point I lost that. And then also when I think about it, like the women in my family, like they, like my grandma's 97 and she's healthy and she's smart, yeah, like she's wow. on, you know, and I should be learning from her.
No,
so I think it's just something that I want to talk more about and to for
go.
Us to just recognize that, like, I feel like the wellness space can definitely be much more inclusive and diverse. And it's not mm-hmm. to say that, you know, these, you know, the European women like who are sharing, it's not to say that they're wrong or it's not to say that their information isn't correct or anything. I just think there should be more perspectives, you know, because we are living in a much more diverse world. And I just felt like 100%. In that retreat, it was very like, it was one perspective. And that kind of lit something in me. And I was like, oh, I actually want more. I want more voices. I want to learn from more women, different women, different looking women. And also I want to see women who look like me out there, you know? And yeah. this kind of comes back to what I was sharing before about being in the start line. Like I want to be at the start line when I get these opportunities because I just want to show other women who look like me that they are allowed to be there. And I also want other women who look like me to be sitting in these panels sharing their knowledge because they have knowledge, you know, and they have so much wisdom and, you know, it can be much more inclusive in that sense.
100%. Yeah. So are you planning on starting keynote speaking or... You know, actually, as you're saying, I want to start talking about this more.
Yeah.
Including it into your regular daily content would be one way to go.
I want to. So I'm going to start making some recipes, actually. I want to show some recipe videos. And also, you know, because I'm in the wellness space, I know this, you know, with all these recipe videos and what I eat in a day, like I actually want to see people who look more like me just showing, you know. It's not to say that it's right, but I just want to show. But also, yeah. I think the one thing that I was so drawn to when I met you is I just really thought you were such a charismatic speaker. And
you're so sweet. Thank
I think,
you.
Like, you know, this is a skill that I would really love to practice, you know. Like, it's something
and
new
as
for me.
You said, yeah. As you said, this is nothing you can't achieve for anyone can't achieve or like telling or whatever. No, as you said, it's consistency,
practice.
It's practice,
yeah.
It's willing to be cringe, it's willing to fail,
yeah.
Trial and error, probably more of the error part at the beginning.
Exactly. So yeah, hopefully I'll be doing more of that.
It's such an important topic though to bring up, to, you know, shed light on, really, because I cannot stress enough how much representation matters.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, can mean so many different things for so many different people. And I just think it's the bare minimum that everyone gets the chance to feel represented in whatever
yeah.
space.
Yeah.
And I think women of all colors, of all ethnicities should be represented in every types of, in like spaces in the sports universe. And yeah, I really appreciate you sharing this. I really appreciate you pushing for, you know, the Asian family. So that's really important for sure.
Yeah, thank you.
Girl, and... You get to wrap up this episode. We've slowly but surely reached the final phase.
Mm-hmm.
And I always give the word to you guys, to my team members, and you get to wrap it up, as I already said, with, you know, just a summarizing pep talk to motivate everyone who's listening to make sure that they're following through of what they're, you know, working on or pushing for, and just remind them of why it's so important to never stop trying.
Wow. Wow. This is, where do I start?
From the heart.
Really love what you see, like love what you see in the mirror. I think that's where you have to start. Look at yourself and just start to love everything that you are exactly as you are, because you have to believe that you are enough. You have to believe that you're enough first. No one else can do this for you. And once you believe you're enough, I think from there, anything is possible, because you start to believe that you can do anything, that you deserve everything, that you're allowed everything and anything. But it has to start with you. So look at yourself, love yourself exactly as you are. You don't need to change anything. You're perfect, you're enough, and move from that space.
Perfect way to end this very thoughtful, very deep, very empowering episode. Thank you so much for your time, your insights, and your story, Juju.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It was so nice to chat to you.